thing is, you look at the screen there and see this little village of Metula. You are actually looking right along the spine to the north and somewhat to the east of Mount Hermon, which is actually a range of mountains. And you're looking at one of the most contested pieces of real estate on earth, right along that ridge line, just going straight away from you there. Everything to the left is Lebanon, and with only a certain territory on the side of the hills here that is reserved for Israeli legal control, you know, the disputed area of the Golan Heights. You have then to the right Syria, so you have nations that have long been at war with each other and at war with Israel. But here's this most peaceful scene, you know, which has known so much blood and turmoil and strife. And so I just put up a picture of the mountain here this morning, thought I would do so again. Now, this mountain is mentioned, I think, over a dozen times in Scripture, and usually for the purpose of reminding us of that glory that Bob introduced in the song here this night. Truly a beautiful place, an awesome place, and one that was utilized by God frequently to call our attention then to His majesty and to His glory. But not directly connected to the material tonight, so if you can turn your attention away from the ski lifts that are also on that mountain, not related to the lesson either, but I thought I'd show you that today the Israelis do operate that. You can see some four lifts in that picture there. Let's step into Rod Taylor's time machine for a second. And if you were to get into the time machine from the movie of 1960 and set those controls for September of 2012, which is exactly 3.5 years ago, you would arrive looking just like this. You may notice that's exactly the same time machine, as a matter of fact. And that's when I first arrived here, and on Wednesday nights began teaching my first lessons on the book of Proverbs. Tonight we're going to be looking at the book of Proverbs again, but 3.5 years ago, as I introduced the book, I showed you one slide that was about the feel of Proverbs, especially in the early chapters, but quite a few chapters, although I think truly it would be wise to retain some conscious thought of the feel of the book as you go through all of the book of Proverbs. And this one slide, as I pointed out 3.5 years ago, looked like this. There are 18 verses in just the first 8 chapters that are addressed to my son. So the feel of Proverbs, in the early going at least, is that of a father. No doubt, a kind and loving father. It is the advice of one who truly cares about his own beloved offspring. It carries with it then all the sensations of the heart that is knit and bound with a child that you love. It's easy as we get into the book of Proverbs to lose that sensation, I suppose, because much of the book, of course, contains short statements that we recognize as being very wise and get lifted, you know, kind of out of context, because really they're designed for that too. It's not that all the time there is some context even to lift them from. They're independent sayings. But the book was apparently motivated by the Holy Spirit, granted miraculously to King Solomon, about whom we'll be reading much and have already seen, you know, his miraculous bestowal of wisdom. But the heart of it is pleading with a child that you love. So I wasn't able to develop the idea 3.5 years ago. Thought then tonight, as you'll be reading the first 17 chapters of the book of Proverbs in the course of our coming to the class here in 3 more days, that I might go ahead and flesh that out just a little bit. Solomon was, of course, a son, which is no surprise. But by that, you know, I want to emphasize he was not an abandoned child. He was not an orphan child. He was not a neglected child, I don't believe. He is raised by his father and his mother. And he is a child raised then by David and Bathsheba, raised by a man who is after God's own heart. Solomon is a man who all of his life has watched a preeminently perfect man present himself before his eyes, showing him not just telling him, but showing him how to live an ideal and wise life in the presence of God. He was also raised in the courts of that king. Raised in the courts of a king who suffered horribly, who was driven out of his own palace by another son at one point. He is a man then, Solomon is, who has been raised in great splendor and glory and opulence, you know, and wealth, but also through, you know, terrible difficulties as well as great success by a man after God's own heart. I am presuming then that he was raised very well. And having been raised well, he is particularly fit as a father to appeal to his own sons and certainly, brethren, to his daughters as well. We've had much debate, of course, in our own country about the proper use of masculine and feminine pronouns and all of that. But I think all of us well understand and don't take any offense at God's choosing to speak of the sons here. But there's nary a thing that would not apply to a daughter as well. But what I think we may be seeing in Proverbs actually is raising a young son to be a king, to be wise beyond the needs of most people, to be a leader in whatever circumstances you may find yourself as a leader. There will never be, would not be, because it is God's design, a woman who would be reigning over Israel like the kings would do. And so it's in the masculine gender, but the wisdom there is about leadership. It's about life, but it's also about royal life. That is to prepare yourself to be as perfect as you can, that multitudes of people would be drawn to your character, would appreciate your decision-making, would be well satisfied with the decisions that you make, and who then would be a willing and responsive subject people because they are looking at an ideal king. So that's those thoughts in mind. What we want to think about as you're reading the book of Psalms is a devoted and wise father who is such, I judge, by the pleas that he makes to his son. You will see that love. You will feel that love. And at times, it's almost the kind of desperate appeals that all parents make when they're begging their children to do right and to do well. So, I've got a single chart here, and we're just going to list these verses. Now, I'm not going to look at all of them. There's actually a total of 46 times that the word son or sons is used throughout the entire book. But I took notice some years ago that after the last one we'll look at here tonight in chapter 8, the use of the word son and sons, with very rare exceptions, very rare, is an altogether different way. It's used in a different manner. It is not used as an appeal, but it's rather a simple description of a good son or a bad son. But in the early chapters, it's the pleading of the father directly to the son. So if you open up to the book of Proverbs, you'll see how early this appeal begins, there in chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Well, certainly you see the women are there and is completely involved as ever the father was. But in verse 9, indeed, these instructions and teachings of the mother and father, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. Now you notice in the chart that I'm going to build here that I'm going to use the convention of capital letters. It's just kind of a simple statement about what really the appeal is. As you look at the two verses, all he said was, listen, pay attention. And then there's a result, though, that follows in the lowercase letters and in the parentheses there. And you'll look good. Okay? It's not a bad thing. But these two things that he mentions in verse 9, you know, it's garland and wreath, are the accoutrements that are designed to bestow honor, glory, recognition, you know, to the individual that wears these things. Somebody who sees you wearing these things is looking at someone that looks good. They've prepared themselves. They should be received with honor. And so right at the outset, you know, as he appeals to this son, you know, listen to our instruction because you'll benefit from it. You'll look better to people out there. You'll be glad that you did. Now, in verses 10 through 19, and in this case as in several others, I'm not going to read all of these verses, but in that section, 10 through 19, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without cause, let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. And as you scan, you can see there, he continues in that vein, down through verse 14, describing the things that they might use as an enticement. You know, you'll get this good stuff if you walk with us. In 15, he repeats that appeal, my son. Do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil. They hasten to shed blood. Indeed, useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. We're living in a time, brethren, where we've been thinking a lot about violence. Thanks to ISIS and events in the Middle East and these things coming now more and more often to our own shores, you know, we're thinking a lot about bloodshed. We're thinking a lot about our security. Here's a king who can't rise in the morning or drift off to sleep in the night without thinking about those things. For he is the soul ultimately responsible for the safety, the preservation of the lives of all of his subjects. So, as the king appeals to his son, whom he is apparently grooming for the throne, after telling him to just listen to his parents, he says, avoid evil, and it'll save your life, because the punishment for evil is death. You are threatening yourself. And what he said in the most poetic, and I think an amusing, you know, manner, as he said, so don't be as dumb as a bird, okay? Or dumber, I should say. You know, a bird knows to avoid a trap, but when you're tempted by evil, and especially if you turn to violence, if you are enticed to seize things that are not yours by right, then you set a trap for yourself. You're not as bright as the sparrows out there who know better than this. It'll save your life if you avoid evil. I'm presuming, again, that David would have taught him some of these things. And the lessons that we've been finding as we've been reading week after week about David's life, you know, lent themselves often to teaching Solomon these things. And while Solomon led preeminently a life of peace, or predominantly rather, a life of peace, still he understands these things. And he adds to them in chapter 2, in the first 5 verses. My son, if you will receive my sayings and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. If you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. Now, you'll see that crop up time and again in your reading of the Proverbs. We mentioned it quite often 3.5 years ago as we were studying the book. But see, again, as particularly he wants to address his son, now he tells us in quite a few different ways, wisdom is a thing that you have to invest a tremendous amount of conscious energy and time to find. You have to treat it like hidden treasures. You have to really get out there and work for it. But if you'll do that, it is promised to you as surely as 3,000 years later, James will tell us that we too can receive that wisdom if we likewise seek for it in the very first verses of James in chapter 1. My son, what he's saying is that sin, that wisdom does not just fall on you. It's not, you know, nearly so easy, I think, as the motivational section of Barnes and Noble either. You're going to have to get out there and work for this thing. Because as we learn from the life of Solomon, and especially when you get to the book of Ecclesiastes here in a few weeks, what you're going to discover there, of course, is that Solomon had that wisdom not just by inspiration or by miraculous bestowal, but also by experience. You just got to get out there and work to find it. But you will. In chapter 3, at verses 1 and 2, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you." Now, before you talked about the fact in chapter 1, verses 10 through 19, that if you avoid evil, you know, you avoid the pitfalls and dangers that attend it. You know, however you felt about the occupation in Eastern Oregon, whatever you think about, you know, the rights and wrongs of the government or the people that took over that preserve and all the rest of that, when the guy runs a police blockade, crashes his car out in the snow, and starts running around between two armed police officers that he's been telling for weeks, you know, that he's armed and he'll go down fighting and he'll never be arrested, you know, and he's reaching twice for a pocket, what do you expect? You're going to get shot. Well, you should avoid doing those kinds of things. It'll save your life. But if you keep the commands, this is a different approach to this, then your life is not only extended, but it becomes a life of peace. This is great blessing. Talking about that, we came in, you know, earlier this evening. A life of peace, a life that is free from the stresses and strains and problems and fears and confusions that confront most of us, is a just wonderful blessing. And so, seek after boredom is the terms we were using, but you know, have a life then free from these kinds of things is within your grasp. But the formula for acquiring it is presented for us. And the book was written to grant those things to us. We come a little later in the same chapter, and maybe you're picking up, you know, and how often this is. We've already come to five of these in only three chapters, but in verses 11 and 12 now, "My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father the son in whom he delights." Now, if you've not written in your Bible next to those two verses, Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 11, or if they do not have it written in your marginal references, you certainly want to make sure that you make that notation there. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 11, will expand upon this theme and quote from those verses. But what we find in those two verses, 11 and 12, is that if you can learn, and it's not easy to do, but if you can learn to accept a reproof, to be told that you're wrong, you're out of line, you made a mistake, you know, you goofed. If you can learn how to take that in stride, learn from it, then you will be loved. And notice there in verse 12, "Whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father, the what in whom he delights? Son in whom he delights." I think it's Solomon delighting in his son. And he is revealing, again, by inspiration and experience, that reproof is inevitable. You can't live a sinless life like Jesus did. You're going to make mistakes. You need to learn and to grow. And if you can accept those kinds of criticisms, then recognize God only bestows them upon you because he loves you. It is an act of love on his part. Coming to chapter 4 and skipping down to verses 20, 21, and 22, "My son, give attention to my words." Now at this point, brethren, I've skipped over two of these "my son" passages in chapter 4, which are essentially identical to ones we've already seen. So when he says, "Don't forget these things," he then goes about repeating these things in short order. so that they won't forget these things. Repetition, 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 remember. So every time you're thinking, well, I already knew that, just remember that the wisest man who ever lived and filled with the Holy Spirit to present these things to us chose to repeat these things chapter after chapter. I'm skipping them tonight to get only unique presentations. So in chapter 4, verse 20, my son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them. And here's a new wrinkle, but it'll be repeated many times in the book of Proverbs. Health to all their whole body. So now he's saying, and practicing what he preaches by repeating it many times in the book of Proverbs, if you'll remember these things, then you will not only avoid the kinds of stuff that will get you killed, have a longer life and one that is peaceful, but you'll be healthier while you're living out those days too. Your physical body is going to be stronger and happier throughout the extra years that God will grant you by taking his advice. It gets to be a pretty good life. Now, chapter 5, at verses 1 and 2, my son, give attention to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion, and your lips may preserve knowledge. Really, all he said is remember again. But he has promised wisdom again. And so, yes, it comes up quite a few times, but he is repeating the remembering. Now, I thought it'd be a good idea if we did again here as well. Remember. Be conscious. Work at keeping God prominently in your mind, his teaching, at all times. Now, tomorrow, be a fun exercise for you, and maybe a little bit discouraging, but, you know, try to just count the times when you remembered God. And for all too many of us, you know, I'm sure, because it's not easy, you're going to get through, you know, the next 8 hours of that work day. You're going to get through the next, what will feel like 68 hours of child raising in the next 24 actual hours. You know, you're going to recognize that God just most of the time is not present consciously in my mind. I'm not remembering and asking myself, how would God have me respond to this child? How would God have me respond to this employer or this subordinate on the job? How would God, you know, expect me to react with the UPS guy? Tell you what I do with my UPS guy. I invited him to one of our meetings. I gave him a copy of Muscle and a Shovel. Guess what he'll be getting before too long? A DVD. So, you got these people in your lives who are a mission field that comes to you. So, if God is on your mind, it's not just, oh boy, Crate and Barrel! You know, it's, well, dear God, here's an opportunity. What am I supposed to do with it? And thanks for Crate and Barrel. You know, arriving on time, I got my, you know, bucket of fruit or whatever it is. So be wise by remembering always God is what matters in my response to the opportunities he gives me. Chapter 5 again, and looking at verses 7 through 14, we'll read all of it. And now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. Who's the her? If you know verse chapter 5, first time that adulterous woman is introduced is in chapter 5. We have several chapters about her, the very most effective and powerful enticements. So, verse 8, keep your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one. And he goes on to describe in some gruesome detail how bad this can get. And then he ends up in verse 14, I was almost in utter ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Apologies if I've told you this story before, but the very first church I was ever a part of, ripe old age of 21, had only been there for a couple of months, and one of their deacons got up and admitted to adultery on a business trip.
while his devastated young wife and their little boy of about 5 or 6 years old, who was the cutest thing you've ever seen,
you know, were just falling apart in the midst of this confession. I've seen that ruination. I've seen that desolation. I've seen, you know, that agony, and it really impressed me at the ripe old age of 21 when I had to behold it, you know, in this man who had had a position of prominence and responsibility and just demolished it all. So in these verses, he is saying, again,
now in a particular temptation by which you can save your life. You can escape ruin.
My son, my son. On chapter 6, in verses 1 through 5. My son, if you become shrewdy for your neighbor, read cosigner, have given a pledge for a stranger, if you've been snared with the words of your mouth and caught with the words of your mouth. Well, then skipping to verse 5, deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Now, he's given financial advice, and he will more than once in this book of Proverbs. Now, this is the king talking to his son, the prince. Okay? How often would these two be approached by people saying, guarantee, you know, my loan? You got all the money. It'd be easy for you. If I default, you know, surely you can afford it. Solomon's the wealthiest guy on the planet, apparently, you know, at this time. And what's Solomon's advice? Standing there with the equivalent of millions and billions. You just say, quote Nancy Reagan, no. I'm sorry, son. Don't do this, whoever you may be. Now, on this one, just the one thought. Interesting, the book of Proverbs as well, I think. Would that be a sin if you co-signed? I don't think so. I think it would be foolish, least unwise, if that sounds better to you, but dangerous, certainly. No matter how well you know this individual, no matter if they can tug on your heartstrings like only a child could do, like a brother or sister might do, etc., no matter how hard this might be, that's a pretty lengthy, those five verses, and passionate appeal that you don't fall into this trap. Now, chapter 6 and verse 20. My son, observe the commandment of your father. Do not forsake the teaching of your mother. Bind them continually on your neck. Tie them around your neck. When you walk about, they'll guide you. When you sleep, they'll watch over you. When you awake, they'll talk to you. Well, first thing he did was mention the parents in the 8th and 9th verses of the book. Again, he's saying the same thing. But now he's saying there's this mantle of protection around you. You can just escape so many problems if you'll tie those teachings around your neck. That's why I say count how many times God comes to mind tomorrow. Okay? Then you ladies that wear scarves or you guys that wear ties, you know, how many times would that thing swing off into your vision? You know, well, tie it around your neck and you'll remember that it's there. Let's summarize and close the lesson from chapter 8. I'm skipping over several now, but coming to chapter 8, let's look at verses 32 through 36. And please note, I think we are intended to study our Bibles, the use of the plural now. My sons, therefore my sons, listen to me. Blessed are they who keep my ways. Heed instruction and be wise. Do not neglect it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at my doorposts. He who finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me, that is this advice against wisdom, injures himself. All those who hate me love death. This, brethren, is not a game. The book of Proverbs, I knew I was running out of gas today. The book of Proverbs, brethren, is a matter of life and death. Time and time again, it's a matter of life and death. And this wonderful father, pleading with his son, and then extending, I think, that to all of his sons, isn't it curious that a man with 700 wives and 300 concubines has only one named son in all the chapters that are devoted to him? And his name is Rehoboam. Rehoboam, who will destroy the United Kingdom, who will prove that he did not listen to his father's advice. He will be a fool and consequently will create grief of epic proportions for hundreds of years to come. This is no game. For yourself, for your family, for your grandkids and all the greats and the great-greats to come long after you've departed this earth, for yourself, just to begin, be wise, brethren. It lies here on the pages of this book, not just in Proverbs, but from Genesis to Revelation. It lies here for us to grasp. And you've just seen, I should go back to that, I suppose, all of the great good that will come from it. We can help you in that quest for wisdom. If you are one who has been studying, has decided to become a Christian this night, if you have anything else on your mind, need prayer, whatever, please let it be known. Speak with me as we stand now and sing our final song.